Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the LifeWire podcast. And thank you guys for joining us on this Sunday, November 19th. Today is a Q&A episode for the month of November in 2023. We decided to just open this up to you guys to ask us really any questions in regard to fitness, business, health, nutrition, you know, training, anything personal as well. And we got some great questions that we're really looking forward to dive into today. But before we begin, this episode is brought to you by Nash Nutrition. The Nash Bar is made with simple and nourishing ingredients, 20 grams of protein, and is naturally sweetened with honey and dates. And what a lot of people don't realize is that most of the so-called, you know, healthy protein bars that we find on the market are unfortunately just heavily processed. You know, Christina actually posted just yesterday when she was at home with her mom, they were comparing, you know, basically just like a conventional protein bar with the Nash Bar. And I mean, the list of ingredients and even processed ingredients in the bar were like crazy. And I was thinking about this even on Friday, like we were running low on groceries and I was thinking about getting some food out and I decided to just have a couple more Nash Bars than I normally do. And I think I ended up having like three total Nash Bars on Friday. And I feel like if I would have done this with like a typical just conventional protein bar, like I literally would have felt like shit. Like I have felt like that in the past where, you know, you consume some of these products with a ton of processed ingredients and you just don't feel right. It doesn't sit well. And, you know, after eating all of these Nash Bars on Friday, like I literally just felt great because they truly are all literally comprised of all whole foods. You know, there's nothing processed, nothing, you know, no preservatives, no nothing inside of these bars. And, you know, this is why we truly just love the Nash Bars. We don't even have to think twice about the ingredients or how we're going to feel after we consume one or even three like I did. As you guys can tell, we're literally obsessed with these things, just like everybody else. You know, every single person that we have told about the Nash Bar has literally fallen in love with them. So make sure you guys get ahead of the next launch on November 30th at 6 p.m. Set your alarms at 5:58, 5:59. You want to get ahead of this because they go so fast. So set your reminders November 30th for 6 p.m. to get yourself a box of bars to try. So on to today's episode. This is episode 111, Q&A, November 2023.
On to the first question. If you could only do 3 to 5 exercises for the rest of your life, what would they be and why?
This is a great question. I think, you know, whenever we think about this, we just got to like be strategic and think about how can we get the most bang for our buck, especially if we're, you know, really limiting it to these 3 to 5 exercises. But, you know, when I think about this, I immediately think of split squats. You know, split squats are like the literal best exercise you could do for just total leg strength, total leg development. You know, you guys probably see stuff on the internet or people talking about like different stance and positioning on it, you know, to target different muscle groups. But at the end of the day, just the nature of this exercise, especially like, and I'm talking about the rear foot elevated split squats, like you are truly training the entire leg. You are training your glute, you are training your hamstring, you are training your quad. Even though it is like technically a quad dominant exercise, you are truly training that entire leg. And so this is one, I mean, quite literally, I'm going to be doing this one for the rest of my life. I mean, not only, you know, are you building the hell out of the muscle tissue in the leg, but you're also getting those prehabilitation components as well. You're strengthening, you know, the soft tissue, the tendons as well, and the knee joint. I mean, there are literally so many benefits to split squats. It's probably why I do some variation of these like literally all the time. So without a doubt, split squats. And then, you know, I have to go with pull-ups, you know, whether it's underhand grip, overhand grip, supinated, pronated, I think both are absolutely phenomenal. You know, when we're doing pull-ups, you truly are like recruiting every single muscle in that back. Like it is a total back exercise. And this is one of those really intense exercises too, where like, you know, the more you fatigue, the more effort you're putting forth on this movement, just like the more muscle fibers in the back are going to be recruited. Plus, I think if you play around with the grip, like even going to like a supinated underhand grip, like you're going to get so much bicep involvement. Chris literally the other day was doing eccentric pull-ups. She felt just how demanding it was in the core. I mean, literally describe what you felt doing those eccentric pull-ups.
So this is one of my exercises I would do forever for this exact reason. I was doing underhand eccentric pull-ups. I did like 4 to 5 sets and I was sore like up in like even today, honestly. Like I did this probably on Wednesday. And my arms, back, like my biceps, my back, and my core were so sore. I felt like I did a Legree class for like 5 days straight. And it was just from the pull-ups alone. Like that was the only thing I changed. And I really just like threw it into my workout in the beginning because I just love how much you get from that movement and it makes you feel so much stronger. Like that's where strength is built in that eccentric movement, but pull-ups are like for your entire upper body and your core. So if you're choosing something to do for the rest of your life, you might as well get the most bang for your buck.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another one I definitely have to throw in there, I really would say the seated shoulder press, because, you know, not only is this going to help you with a lot of shoulder development, so like this will be like the compound version where we don't have to, you know, necessarily like isolate, like this is where I'd pick like a shoulder press versus like a lateral raise, for example, because you're just getting so much more muscle fiber involvement in a compound lift like that. Plus, you know, you're still going to be training a little bit of that upper chest. And then I feel like I have to get some explosive movement in there as well, just to really just to train those fast twitch fibers. And so really the last one I throw in there is the dumbbell high pulls. This one is a hinge style movement, so you're already going to be doing kind of like an RDL style hip hinge. And then you're going to be exploding up into, you know, that high pull, or what it would look like more like an upright row. So this is kind of like a dumbbell version of the barbell high pull, like Olympic variation. And I've been utilizing these a lot in my training, and it is insane how much is happening at play here. So not only are you getting the explosive movement, not only are you getting that hinge, you know, you are going to be working that true triple extension. So really training that athleticism through the knees, the hips, the ankles, driving up into that high pull. You're going to be working, you know, the pulling movement, hitting the upright row, upper back, shoulders. I mean, this exercise is insane. And then even as you go back down into another rep, you're having to engage that core, squeeze the core. I mean, this movement is absolutely disgusting if you've never tried it. So I highly, highly recommend giving that a go for some high volume reps, doing them quick, explosively, still control the movement pattern. But I feel like I got to sprinkle in, you know, an explosive movement in there as well.
Mine are very similar. Like I said, pull-ups are the top of my list for that exact reason. This week was a great reminder of how much you get out of that movement, not only for your upper body, but also your core. Then split squats are my second one, and for obvious reasons, like Zach just described, how much muscle recruitment you get in the lower body. You know, I also think about, like, for me, I have a lot of limitations of what I can do with my disc issue. And also I think about, like, what my goals are personally. So this is the why behind each of these movements, is that I'm very limited in my exercise selection for lower body. So I just stick to the basic movements I know give me a lot of bang for my buck and doesn't cause any pain for me. And it also has a balance component as well, which I think is super important, that single leg movement to have in your, you know, lifetime, you know, exercise programming, but also with the balance too. And then the third one is hip thrust for me. Once again, thinking about my goals, thinking about the lower body movements that don't cause pain for me. Also, a lot of muscle groups pulled in there in your entire posterior chain. So whether it's barbell, whether it's a machine hip thrust, whether it's dumbbell hip thrust, even different stances, you can get a lot out of that movement. And I know for me, I leave leg day or even the following day, I just feel like I really got a good workout when I have a hip thrust as my compound movement. Next one, just a combo movement that gets my heart rate up too, kind of inspired by Zach's high pull movement selection. But I think I just love a thruster, like a front squat, shoulder press combo movement, gets my heart rate up, works my entire, you know, body at once. And those are my top, is that three or four movements? Yeah. Those would be my top selections. And my main reason why, once again, is just based on my goals, based on what I know works well for me. And honestly, this is how I structure my workouts lately. I do max like 4 to 5 workouts these days, and they're all movements that I just repeat. They're the basic movements that I know give me a lot of muscle recruitment and happy feeling like I got a good workout without any pain. And that's how you should train.
Yeah. And I like that you threw thrusters in there. That's a phenomenal exercise. Like, a lot of people hate on some of these combo movements, and yeah, some of them are unnecessary. Like when you're pairing together two like totally different exercises, for example, like a squat and like a bicep curl, like the load differentiation is going to be like drastically different based off those two exercises. But like a thruster, you know, you're basically just doing that kind of full body movement, training that explosiveness, that power, great for conditioning. So it all falls back on, you know, what is the intent we're ultimately trying to get out of this exercise? And that's an awesome one. You know, you're going from a squat into, you know, a press. You're really utilizing, you know, the momentum, the explosiveness from the lower body driving it up through, you know, that extended position. So phenomenal exercise. I love that you threw that in there.
Thank you. The next one is how to do the inner work as an individual and as a couple.
Yeah, this is a great question. And I think that, you know, when it comes to doing like the work on yourself, I think, you know, at the very basic level, the way I've always thought about it is like just exposing myself, you know, to different potential things in life. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, if there's a book on a topic that I'm interested in, or there's a subject that, you know, I'm looking to learn more about, or even if there's something within myself that I'm trying to grow and develop, like a skill, for example, like I always find, you know, that is really what helps me think. And I feel like anytime we put ourselves in a position or put ourselves in an environment to really question why, or think about, you know, why are we doing this? Or like basically just like that feeling of exploration where, you know, you're really questioning things, you're questioning yourself, you're questioning why you do certain things, I think can be so powerful, because then you start to challenge like why you're doing what you're doing, how you're doing what you're doing. And it really starts to bring out a new level of self-awareness. And that's really when I think about like the inner work, I really just think about like, how can I become, you know, so self-aware with myself? Not to the degree where it's like debilitating and like, it's almost like you're causing so much of a distraction at that point where you're like, you're almost hyper-focused on, you know, the self-awareness, but just being aware of like, okay, like, why do I act the way I do? You know, what are the reasons, like, why do I respond in these situations in the way that I do? And I feel like a lot of that is just discovered through doing that personal development work. And so whether or not you have something very specific you're trying to develop, like for example, like Chris and I will kind of like professionally develop with like our certifications or like our continued education. But, you know, a lot of the stuff we do even for ourselves, you know, really comes down to like journaling, reflecting on, you know, what, how are things going? You know, what are we happy with how things are going? Are there things we want, you know, to be different? And I think just like giving yourself the time and the space to have that like constant assessment in life can be so powerful. And then very similarly, you know, we do this as a couple as well, where I feel like we communicate a lot, which I think is important, just like communicating your collective and individual goals, what you guys value. I think just like the more on the same page you can be as a couple, the more you can put yourself in that position to grow, to develop as a couple. And I think that that's something that we've really done really for our whole relationship, where, you know, we're very much so on the same page. You know, we both have a similar vision. Even with things that we want to do differently, we still have like that general theme of progress, that general theme of growth that we both want to embrace, not only individually, but also collectively.
Yeah. And I think at the very foundation, like when we first started dating, which was, by the way, for a lot of people, for context, the day before the pandemic started. So we went straight into spending so much time together. So we did have a lot of time to like talk about our goals, to communicate, to spend time on personal development. We were also working on those things far before we even met. And I think that's something that a lot of people discount or don't focus on when they are single. And I think that I'm going to give a couple book recommendations that I think have helped, like that I'll recommend to my clients who are single, because I'm like, you'll never have this time back where you can become the person you're supposed to be to attract the person you are supposed to. And I truly believe in that, because before I met Zach, I was reading like the five love languages to understand like how I wanted to be loved in a future relationship. I even did a course, and there's a book called Becoming the One, where you become the one for yourself before you become the one for another person. And this is just doing personal development that like truly aligns with like what you're focusing on. So if you're focusing on attracting a relationship that is aligned with you, do the personal development work that aligns with that. So I read this book, did this course, and I wrote down the non-negotiables that I wanted to see in a future partner. And without even realizing it, I was attracting Zach like literally across the apartment complex from me, who checked every single box. But I knew what I was looking for. And it's just like when you're interviewing for a job, like you know what you're going to settle for, what you're not going to settle for, and you know exactly what you want for your position, and you attract that, you're ready for it when the opportunity comes, and then everything aligns from there.
Yeah. And I feel like what happens a lot of times, and I'm just speaking even more so, you know, from like the standpoint of the guy, but I feel like it does apply to the women as well. You know, but something that I feel like a lot of us guys struggle with is that ego, where like we already think we're perfect. We already think we know everything. We already think we're the best at everything we do. And it's like, if you have that mindset, like you're never going to be open to growth. You're never going to be open to changing. And I feel like when I started to really drop and chip away at my own ego, and I started to kind of unveil all these different things that I needed to improve, that's where it became obvious, like, okay, I need to do this work. I need to, you know, better myself. Because honestly, the way I think about it is like, you know, Christina, and she's not going to want to be with me if I'm, you know, just some piece of shit. You know what I mean? Like, I have to, you know, develop. I have to, you know, show up as the best version of myself to better our relationship. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people just like get comfortable. They're like, oh, I'm in a relationship. I can just like back off and just chill and like become a piece of shit. Like, I'm telling you, like, probably not smart. And, you know, that's your significant other is not going to be attracted to that. They're not going to, you know, enjoy that. That's where I think a lot of resentment starts to happen, honestly. And I'm not like speaking from some high pedestal, like I'm perfect. Like, I'm constantly working on this shit and working on my own stuff. And I think that that's the important lesson here, is like, you know, it doesn't stop. It's a thing where, you know, we might discover more about ourselves. We might unveil, you know, that self-awareness and really figure out what it is we need to work on. And we may actively work on that and improve those things, but it's a never ending process. It's a never ending game. We're always going to be, you know, doing that inner work, self-reflecting, assessing, you know, where could I be better? Where am I maybe falling short? And I think the ego can really, really screw us if we allow it to take over, especially us dudes. You know, we will just think, we'll just walk around, you know, thinking we're the best, thinking we got everything figured out. And quite literally, we do not. And we need to always work on ourselves and develop ourselves to become the best version of ourselves.
Exactly. And I think that at the basis of that, it's just being willing to change and grow. And I think that where a lot of relationships may fail is that one person is willing to grow and has that growth mindset where they want to continue becoming better, and one person does not focus on growth. So you eventually outgrow the versions of each other that you started, you know, dating in the beginning. So for us, we're just always going to be growing together. And we make that a big priority in our relationship. Like when we first started dating, we communicated like, oh, I love reading personal development. That's actually something that attracted me to Zach. And that was actually how I shot my shot, was through a personal development topic. And
that is true.
That's something that we've always had in common. So when we first started dating and like spending a lot more time together, we would read personal development books and share books with each other. We'd literally swap books, spend that time going to the bookstore together. Like that was fun for us because that's something that we enjoy. So I think finding something that you have in common with your partner and continuing to make that a priority. Like there's days where on Wednesdays, for example, we prioritize like our professional development. I'm studying for my pre and postnatal. Zach is studying for precision nutrition. And we'll spend that time, like, instead of studying on our own, like me studying while he's at work, like I'll come into his office and we'll do it in the same room together. But it's something that we're doing separately, but spending that quality time both growing is something that will always be a foundation of our relationship. So I think finding those things you have in common and doing it together, like we both value quality time. So we spend that quality time on ourselves growing, but also together as a couple collectively. We'll talk more about relationship stuff here soon. There's another similar question that I think you guys will enjoy, but actually might as well go into that one now. So what are things you've done to grow your relationship to be as strong as it is?
Yeah. I mean, I think the communication is a lot, and just like, you know, having that shared vision, because I feel like, you know, if we're not on the same page with what we want to do financially, if we're not on the same page with what we value with our personal time, like, you know, the way that we, you know, prioritize our health, our fitness, like all of these things that we truly value and prioritize, like if we did not share an equal kind of value system and we didn't prioritize the same things, there'd be a lot of tension just in our lives. And so I feel like, you know, to really grow and create a relationship that is strong, I really do feel like we need to be on the same page, you know, especially, you know, as a couple, like we really do have to be, you know, kind of beating the same beat on the drum, you know, as we're progressing forward, because once, you know, one person, you know, values this thing and it's in contrast with what the other person values, I feel like that's just when tension arises. And I feel like that can happen in a relationship a lot. And that's where we've been fortunate, where, like, we talked about this the other day, like just how we communicate about financial things and financial obligations in our lives. Like a lot of people like don't want to talk about that, or they think it's uncomfortable. And it's like, no, we have this shit down to like the dollar, because we want to be successful long term. We don't want to just put on some, you know, bullshit facade, like, hey, like, you know, you don't know how much I'm making. Like, I don't know how much you're making. And it's like, you know, we don't really know what we're budgeting. We're just kind of like spending randomly and like going out to this restaurant, going out to this social event. It's like, no. Like that's the easiest way to just stumble our way into debt. We've both been there mm-hmm. in the past.
And we're honest about that too. Like debt is something I feel like not a lot of people talk about. And that's where like, there's just statistics out there that money's one of the biggest reasons for fighting in a relationship when you get married. So we're like, we're going to get way ahead of that and talk about finances like while we're dating.
Yeah, exactly. And like, it's so freeing being on the same page, because it's like, okay, you have X amount of dollars left in your restaurant budget. I have X amount of dollars left in my restaurant budget. We can kind of tag team. We can alternate, you know, when we're going out to eat. It's not like I'm just, you know, alone spending like thousands at a restaurant because, hey, I'm the guy, you know. Mm-hmm. We have a balanced system. And I feel like having that system in place is what's going to bring us that long-term wealth. And that's something that, you know, I think if more couples could talk about, not only is it going to benefit you financially, and not only has it benefited us financially, but it's just that shared vision. It's that collective vision of what is the direction we're headed in? What are our efforts? What do our efforts look like on a day-to-day basis? And are they in alignment with one another, with where we see our relationship going and where we see our life going?
Yeah. And I think that just comes down to being able to be vulnerable with each other, because that's something where we've just been able to do that from the very beginning. Just like, I've always felt so safe with Zach. So I feel like finding someone that you feel safe with is very important. Like I've been able to, even before we started like officially dating, I would leave our hangouts and be like, oh my gosh, why am I like spilling my soul to this man? But it's because like we were meant to be. But truly, you should be able to talk about anything, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's what helps our foundation feel very strong. because we've seen it all with each other and we're on the same page with everything. But I also think that something that's important in our relationship is understanding like where we need to grow. And once again, relating back to how we grow individually and collectively, we both value therapy. We both value like doing that inner work because we know it's going to make our future family stronger. It's going to make our future, you know, marriage stronger too. And that's what helps us like manage our stress level so that when we do come together at the end of the day, we're very present. We're able to enjoy that quality time together, which is a huge non-negotiable for our relationship too.
Well, and it's funny how everything goes back to self-awareness, because like a lot of times, like as kids, we're conditioned to believe certain beliefs, we're conditioned to act a certain way in certain situations, we're conditioned to respond in certain situations, whether it's stressful situations, whether it's chaotic situations, whether there's, you know, maybe we're butting heads and like you respond in a certain way from what you've seen when you were a kid. And it's like, if you never had the awareness or developed the self-awareness to work on the shit that maybe you were conditioned to believe or how you were conditioned to act, then that's going to rub off on our relationship. That's going to rub off on our future kids. So it's like we value getting ahead of that and actively working on ourselves, working on our collective relationship, you know, to get to a point where, you know, when we have kids, we're not, you know, rubbing off anything negative or passing along anything negative to them. We're starting, you know, them, bringing them into a world, into an atmosphere and an environment where, you know, they're going to be the best version of themselves. And I feel like, you know, it's just so important. And whether that's related to kids or not, just even our own individual and collective growth, like I think it's just important. And it's so crazy how like everything goes back to self-awareness at the end of the day. And that self-awareness, like we did a whole episode about, is our superpower, you know, if we really dive into it and do that work.
Yeah. And I just have a couple more things to add that just keep coming to me. But I also think that it's extremely important to just make time for each other. I think that when life gets busy and you're in a relationship for a longer period of time, like we're in a very busy season of life right now with the holidays, with work, with wedding planning. And if you don't make time, like I think that in the wedding planning process, which also came up as a question, I think that it's important to focus on your marriage, not just the big day. Like that's just one day in the grand scheme of your entire life together. And it's an extremely important day and we're so excited for it. But we also focus on like having a date night often. If we have like a huge weekend where we're like, I'm going to be gone, or I've had like a lot of like social events the past month, I'm like, hey, let's go on a date on a Thursday, go to a movie, like do something we both enjoy before the weekend so we can spend that quality time together. I think that if that's someone's love language, then you have to lean into that. And it's both our love languages. So spending that quality time together is an extremely important non-negotiable in our relationship. And the last thing I want to say was that we're just a team when it comes to like whether it's tackling like how we cook our meals or how we navigate the day, like with the dogs and with work and even the weekends, like we're just constantly operating as a team where we're like helping each other out. If one person is having like, whether that's like a more stressful day, a rough day, like the other will pick up the slack. And also something I learned in therapy too is I was talking to my new therapist about just like how we're focusing on our marriage before we get married. And she's like, that's incredible, because it's something to always remember that like whether no matter what the problem is that comes your way throughout now and like the rest of your lives, is that it's you two against the problem. It's never you two against each other. So we just treat every single thing that pops up, whether it's just like an inconvenience or something that, you know, we're struggling with, we tackle it head on as a team. And even if it's something as simple as like, even at the holidays, that's something my mom pointed out that I was just like, oh, this is something that I value in our relationship. I hadn't maybe noticed before because it's just how we've always been. But in the kitchen, when we host for the holidays, we're both just like, he's cooking, I'm cleaning, I'm helping with the sides, he's cooking the meat, we're plating things together and helping each other out. My mom's like, you guys make such an incredible team in the kitchen, but it also applies to, you know, our entire relationship. So long story short, just like be a team, be self-aware, communicate, and spend quality time with each other is the main, you know, bullet points here. The next one is a little bit different of a topic, business and fitness wise, experiencing burnout under a coaching team. Advice for making the transition to go solo.
Wow. Yeah, this is a good one. I never worked under a coaching group or coaching team. I know Chris did, but I've definitely learned quite a bit about going solo. I've been solo, you know, kind of from the jump. And I just will say it's a huge responsibility. And when I say that, I think that's something that's very underrated that people don't talk about in entrepreneurship. And Jeremy Scott was talking about this on his podcast the other day, but just especially when you're someone that really cares, you know, this is something you're genuinely passionate about. It is your purpose. It is your calling. It is something that you feel truly compelled to do in life, whatever that is. And obviously this one is talking about coaching and fitness specifically, but whatever that is, I feel like you take on a shit ton of responsibility. And what I mean by that is like, you know, you're very hard. We're very hard on ourselves. You know, we're very hard on, you know, how we're showing up every day. You know, are we, you know, showing up at a high level? Are we giving it our best? Are we, you know, high energy? Are we giving us enough value to our clients? Are we giving enough value, you know, to our community? There's so many just pressures we can put on ourselves. And I think that's something that I've learned in entrepreneurship that is probably the most important thing is how we regulate our mindset. You know, mindset is truly everything. You know, in the very beginning stages of owning a business, it's almost like survival mode. It's like, how can I literally just get to the next week, get to the next month, and just keep this thing going, keep this train running. But then when you get to that point where it is a sustainable business and, you know, you're scaling, you're looking at the metrics, you're, you know, dealing with all this back end stuff, like Jeremy said this too on his podcast, he's like, as you get deeper into this, it's like what you really love to do, which is like the fitness and helping people and training people, is literally like 10% of it. And then like 90% is literally all this back end, you know, business stuff. And it requires a strong mindset, because it's very easy to have that negative self-talk, like, and that victim mindset. You know I've stumbled into it. I've vented to Christina multiple times throughout this entrepreneurial journey about certain circumstances and me just being really hard on myself. And so I think the biggest thing and biggest piece of advice that I could give to you going solo is really managing that mindset, because managing that mindset is going to allow you to not get burnt out and overwhelmed. And it's also going to then allow you to show up as the best version of yourself. Because a lot of times when we're looking to attract clients or looking to scale, you know, our fitness business, it falls back on us. Like, there's no one else promoting it or no one else that cares nearly enough about it as we do as the sole owner. And so you have to have that mindset that it is up to you, and for you to show up as your best self and to grow that business, you have to manage your mindset so that you can show up as the best version of yourself.
Yeah. And I think that something that just goes on what you were saying was that you have to wear all the hats when you are on your own. Like, you're doing the sales calls, you're doing the marketing, the social media, the coaching, the back end things. Obviously we have like accountants and things like that, but something that, and I'll explain kind of the process of like how I moved from that burnout to going back solo, was mentally preparing to be in charge of those things again. Like, previously I had done all my own sales calls. I had done all my own, you know, everything. You do everything as the solo, you know, business owner. But then I gotten used to not doing the sales calls, or there are certain marketing aspects that like weren't in my wheelhouse anymore. So I kind of got used to that, but that's something you have to kind of mentally prepare for and start working on before you go off on your own again. And this also depends on like if you have been on your own before and then you're transitioning back on your own, or if you started your coaching business as a whole in this team. But for me, I honestly, like, how I started to listen to my gut when I was getting burnout was, obviously I communicated a lot and like leaned on my people. I talked to Zach about it a lot. I talked to my mom about it a lot. I really listened to my gut. And something my mom said was just like, okay, if you're experiencing like higher stress, higher anxiety, any other time I've seen you experience this, it was because you were resisting a change you know you have to make. So I really listened to that and like just like use the people around me just kind of as a sounding board. And then I started doing the work beforehand. So like essentially doing the personal development that I needed to do to become that entrepreneur again, and just like making sure this was the right decision. So I did like read a ton of personal development books in that season of life. One was Burnout to Balance from Nicole Lappin. Highly recommend. I listened to that on audiobook in 24 hours. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to make this change. The next book I read was How to Do the Work. And that's essentially like, is more of like a therapeutic kind of personal development book, but it really just showed me like, here's the stuff I'm resisting and here's how I listen to it. Really just helped me trust myself because I got to know myself a little bit more. And I journaled like freaking crazy. When Zach went to work in the morning, this was when he was like solely, you know, in the gym in the morning doing online training in the afternoon. I'd spend a lot of my morning, like I would have to meditate just to like show up to work because I was so burnt out. And then I'd also journal of like, what did my ideal day look like? What does my ideal business look like? Like I started to get excited about being in control of my own future and like being my own business again and like creating that vision. So I would vision board on Pinterest. I would journal. I would also list out the pros and cons. Like, here's the pros and cons of being part of a coaching company. Here's the pros and cons of me being on my own. And it came down to like, I didn't care. Like, we even had a talk with my financial coach. And if you have someone who handles your finances, it's a good conversation to have. Because when you are going from a coaching company to on your own, like you're going from a comfy salary and position to literally ground zero. And that's something that I was prepared to do because I was at my peak level of discomfort. And we actually have a podcast episode called like Discomfort Happens at Change Happens at Your Peak Level of Discomfort. And that episode was kind of built out of like how I felt in that moment. And that was like, I was at my rock bottom where like I would make $0. And I even told Zach, I'm like, I would go be a barista because I'm so burnt out. Like, I just want to like be in control of my own day and not feel this like heaviness anymore. And I want to be in control of my own schedule. So I was like, I'm willing to go to ground zero, but you also have to prepare financially for that. Meaning, do you have money saved? Do you have someone who can help support you? And that's a conversation we had to have. Like, okay, if it takes a while for my business to build back up, like how are we willing to change our budget and our finances to make that happen? So if you do have a significant other who handles the budget with you, that's a conversation to have ahead of time so they can help kind of brace for impact. So I was doing this work kind of bracing for impact, but also preparing myself to have this tough conversation because it's a tough conversation to have for sure. And Zach helped prepare me for that and was like, this is a conversation that's going to like make you the woman you're supposed to be in the future. And that gave me the confidence to do it. So like doing the personal development, tackling your burnout in that moment, because you are still coaching clients, you want to be able to show up for them as best as you possibly can. And doing the meditation in the morning, journaling, it helped me show up and like be present each day. I'm like, how can I bookend my day with stress management so that during the day I can handle what I'm meant to do, like follow like my purpose while I'm preparing to follow my bigger purpose and this bigger vision that I have for myself? Because you do not want to leave those clients hanging. You want to coach them, the hell out of them with all the energy you have left. You know, that burnout is so real. I remember feeling like, and even my clients noticed it. And that's something that I would never want to happen again. That was my sign, was when even on my stories, my clients would be like, hey, like, you don't seem like yourself. I hope you're doing okay. That's when I was like, I got to go, you know, because if it's showing up in how I show up in my purpose, like that's not okay with me. So that's when I finally made the decision. So start making moves like financially preparing, budgeting, saving, doing the personal development. And I also started doing therapy in this time too, because I was like, I want to feel confident in myself going on my own. I want to manage this burnout. And I literally told my therapist, I'm doing this because I never want to feel this burnt out again.
And I feel like you just have to be able to take on a certain amount of risk. Like what Chris said there, you know, she basically had to take a step back to then propel her even further in the future. But like if she would have never taken that risk in that moment and was willing, you know, to take that step back, she would not be where she is today. And she's far better off, you know, both mentally, but also financially, you know, than you were in that position. So that's like got to be the craziest part about some of these entrepreneurial and business decisions is at the end of the day, like I said before, you are the person that's going to make it happen. And sometimes we have to take that step back to be able to propel forward.
And something else, when you said like, I'm better off like mentally and, you know, financially and everything, it also made me think of like physically, I'm so much better off now too. So like, especially if you're a health and fitness coach, you want to be able to walk the walk and practice what you
preach. Yeah, you got to be able to practice what you preach. And if you're totally burnt out and have no time to do that, you're not going to show up as your best self.
Exactly. And I even made the time to do that, but there were certain workouts, like I would literally cry because I was like, I'm so burnt out. Like this is... And exercising is a stressor on your body. So I just felt like my peak level of stress, but that also caused a lot of gut health issues for me and hormonal issues for me. Like I now am recovering from adrenal fatigue from that season of life. And at that time I had so many gut issues. It was all tied to stress. The second I went on my own, I had no gut health issues. Well, I have food intolerances, but like I felt so much better physically. And I think you need to pay attention to that. Like that for me was worth the risk. So like thinking about what's worth the risk of taking this big jump. And for me, my mental health, my physical health, and how I show up for my clients was far more worth than the monetary value of being under a coaching team where it's more, I guess you could say, safe in terms of a salary and position and things like that. But honestly, being an entrepreneur is like, there's the beauty of it is like, you can go in person, you could go online, you can mix those things together. And even before I like fully went online the first time around, like I had a serving job or a bartending job. So like having a supplemental income was also helpful in order to take that leap too. So just like preparing in all the areas and journaling about it, I think will help you make that, you know, decision very soundly. The next question is, what kind of CBD do you guys take before bed?
So we take the full spectrum, Lay Pragma is the name. Funny kind of, it's honestly kind of a funny name. But this CBD has been phenomenal for us. We've loved it. We've been taking it for the last like 2-3 years. Literally every single night. And the important thing to just differentiate is like, you know, if you're someone that wants you know, broad spectrum versus full spectrum, like broad spectrum is going to have zero THC inside of it at all. And I always recommend Beam. Like if you're going to go the broad spectrum route, Beam is one of the most reputable CBD companies on the market. Like a lot of professional athletes will take Beam because they know without any THC being in there, they don't have to worry about failing a drug test. Now the full spectrum, it does technically have THC in it, but it's literally like less than, I think like 0.3%, which it's like very, very, very minimal, like trace amounts inside of it. So that's where I would just advise you, like figure out if you're someone that wants the broad spectrum versus the full spectrum. But yeah, the Lay Pragma has been phenomenal for us. Like it just really does help. It helps me get into sleep and then it helps me stay asleep. Like that's the biggest thing I've noticed. And we've tracked it on our Whoops when we had the Whoops. We now track it on our Oura Ring, and way less disturbances, way better REM sleep, deep sleep, way more consistent sleep, really helps us really stay in that circadian rhythm as well. Like even on the weekends, like our bodies will literally wake us up like at our typical wake up time. And so I just feel like it helps promote all of these different areas of sleep. And I even had a client the other day, like, express certain concerns, like, hey, like, is this going to be a bad thing if I take it for like a long time, or what's the long-term effects? And there's actually a lot of research on this, and I looked it up on, like, Harvard had a lot of research articles on it, PubMed had a lot of research articles on it. I really like PubMed. I was telling my client this, if you guys ever want to research anything, any really just any topic in the realm of health or fitness or nutrition, literally search the topic with PubMed and it will bring up all of the official research studies ever conducted and meta-analyses, which are basically like where they do multiple research studies in one, to really back up these different points and these different conclusions. So I always point to the science whenever I have a question like this, and the science is pretty compelling in favor of the CBD being beneficial to our health and especially to our sleep and anxiety. So we highly recommend it.
Yeah, and we'll link the kind we get down in the show notes. We get it from a local place called High Street CBD in Columbus, but they ship everywhere. I've had clients in Hawaii, I've had clients in California, Minnesota, all over the place, order from them. And it's incredible. We get the coconut coffee flavor, which is so good. So next question is, what you wish you knew before starting your business?
So as I was looking at this question, I'm going to totally reframe my answer to this because I was actually having a very similar conversation about this exact kind of topic with one of my clients inside the gym the other day. And ironically, like, naivety and like not knowing can be one of the biggest superpowers when starting a business. And hear me out when I say this. You know, I really experienced this with my football experience. I experienced this with my entrepreneurial journey so far. But when I look back over everything I had to do over the course of like that football journey, if you would have told me like prior to joining that team, like, this is all the shit you are going to have to go through to finally get to that point, like, there's a good chance I probably would have been like, hell no. And now, do I regret the experience? Absolutely not. Like, obviously, I've talked about this so many times. So hear me out when I'm describing this. It's more of a matter of like, if I would have known all that it would have taken, it probably would have deterred me from even beginning. Same thing with this entrepreneurial journey. Like, oh my God, like the amount of stuff that we've had to like learn and grow through and really just learn in general over the course of, you know, these last 3-4 years. Like, if you would have went back to young Zach before he dove into this, it probably would have been like, holy shit, this is like ridiculous. But I had that naivety as my superpower where I didn't know all the different things that I was going to have to do. I didn't know, you know, all of these different hurdles I was going to have to overcome. All I did was just focus on, what can I control now? How can I put one foot in front of the other right now? And I feel like that's the best possible thing you can do when starting something, when, you know, entering a business, changing gears, maybe doing something different, entrepreneurial. Like, that naivety can truly be your superpower, because I feel like for a lot of people, they get caught in this assessment zone where it's like
analysis paralysis.
You're evaluating all these what ifs. Like, I'm telling you guys, there is only anybody that has ever been through a journey like this will tell you this exact same thing. Like, there are so many ways you can talk yourself out of it. And there's so many different what ifs. And don't get me wrong, like, research, creating a business plan, all of those things are fantastic. But I'm telling you, like, at some point, like, there's going to reach a point where you just have to fucking start. And like, that was one of the best things that we ever did. Even when I started this business, where it was like, no, I didn't know all of these different things I was going to have to ultimately do, but I just started very basic level. And honestly, when you look at any of these big companies out there that have scaled to these, you know, 1% of the 1%, like, they all started with a very basic idea, a simple thought, and they acted on it and they just began. And so I know it's kind of funny how I answered that question, but I truly do feel like us not knowing can be one of our biggest superpowers for growth and for really overcoming these challenges, because you can really take that macro goal of starting that business, getting to this point in your career, and you can bring it down to the very basic level of like, yeah, you know, all of that is fantastic, but how do I just start? Like, how can I just literally begin?
And mine's on the note of just beginning as well. I'm a huge perfectionist, and I always thought like, everything has to be perfect before I can release it. And I saw this quote like far beyond my actual start of my business back in 2018, where it was that if you're not embarrassed of your first product, you waited too long to start. And that goes with a podcast episode. It goes with a YouTube channel, even like a tangible product. But for me, I thought I had to have everything perfect. Like I spent so, I'm not going to say I spent so much time. I wasted so much time getting a website perfectly done, like myself. I tried to do everything on my own before like outsourcing. So I thought I had to have like the perfect ebook, the perfect website, the perfect X, Y, and Z before even launching what I was doing. And that in turn was like holding me back from seeing my business grow because I didn't need a website. Like I just needed to start working with clients and like building those testimonials and actually like being in my work versus working on the stuff that like did not matter. Like the perfect logo on Canva and all this stuff that like nobody really cared about. But it's funny to look back on, like right now I have a one-on-one client and a group client. I actually have a lot of clients who were like my first ever clients back then, and they still work with me. And once in a while they'll find like on their Google Drive the first program I had, and it was like an Excel spreadsheet that was like Fit by Chris coaching. And it's like embarrassing to look back on. They're like, oh my gosh, like look how far we've come together, which is so cool. Now they're like on my Built and Balanced Fitness app, like in the one-on-one coaching program and in group coaching that's grown so much. And they're like, it's so cool to look back on like where it all began. But if I had waited until it was perfect, they would have never been a client. So I think that's something I had to just like tell myself over time was like done is better than perfect, which is really hard to grasp if you are a perfectionist. And then I also think that just knowing it's going to be a lifelong professional growth journey and personal growth journey, like entrepreneurship tests you a lot. It's a lot of emotions. It's a lot of highs and lows. It's a lot of just like you have to be really focused on personal development. So like a lot of business coaches and entrepreneurs now out there are like kind of talking shit on a morning routine, but I fully believe like my morning routine has helped me grow my business because when you're growing yourself, your business follows. And I've always prioritized like reading personal development ever since my business started because I now lean into the work I know I need to do. So I'll read professional books or nutrition and training and personal development books that I know I need to help me become the coach I'm going to be. And that helps me coach my clients. Like any tough season of life, any like book that I've read, podcast I've listened to helps me coach my clients to my highest ability. If I had skipped over that work or said it wasn't important, my business wouldn't be where it is today.
Yeah. And I like that you talked about that morning routine component because that is like a big fad I feel like right now on social media is like everyone talking shit on morning routines. And I get these people's points. Like I always take the time to understand both sides in these situations. Like their whole argument is like, look, at the end of the day, morning routine, no morning routine, the work's just got to get done, which that is true. Absolutely. But like Christina said, you know, there's certain things, you know, like a morning routine that get our mind right, that get our mind right to perform and show up as the best version of ourselves. So, you know, some people may not need that. Some people can just, you know, go right in, dive right in, get work done, the shit that they need to get done. You know, for us, we found that, you know, this does help us play the long game and it helps us, you know, really compartmentalize our emotions and our mindset each and every day.
And the truth is you have to fill up your, like coaching is a service-based industry, like, you know, jobs. So you do have to fill up your cup before you show up for others. And my clients who are coaches and my clients who work in healthcare or even like moms, it's something where you have to show up for others as your highest self. And I can't show up for my clients and start check-ins. Like it doesn't matter if I start check-ins at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. Like I have to be good on my own before I can show up for them. So sometimes like starting work a half hour later, like I have all day to get it done. But if I start a half hour earlier and don't show up for myself, it's going to reflect in how maybe I'm more irritable throughout the day. Maybe I'm more stressed or I'm just not able to like focus as much as I would have been otherwise if I had filled up my cup first, which I think is extremely important. And the next and final question is, has wedding planning been stressful?
So honestly, to answer this simply, it really hasn't been. You know, something that I feel like we've done, Chris, you know, from the jump is like completely detach from the norm and the way of doing things. And I just like, we talk about this so much on this podcast, but I just swear, like, as we get older, as we age, we literally become more conditioned. Like, we become more conditioned to think we have to do the wedding in 1 year. We have to have this big, lavish, you know, 200-300 plus person wedding. We have to, you know, put on this show and literally like put on this big presentation for everybody to impress everybody, to literally just impress people. And we completely 110%. Detached from all of that shit. And like, if that stuff makes you happy, like if that genuinely like fires you up and like it makes you so fulfilled and happy to do a wedding like that, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But more times than not, I have people coming to me saying like, dude, how has it been? Like, that was the most stressful time of my whole entire life. Like, that was the most depressed, the most anxious I've ever been. And I'm like, that's probably not a good sign. So like for us, you know, we from the very beginning did it in our own way. And I feel like if the more you can do it in your own way that's true to you and your significant other, the less stress you're going to be. Like, the stress arises when you're trying to put on the show, when you're trying to do all these things to impress everyone else around you except for you. And I think that's the irony of this whole, like, we're just stepping into like this whole new learning experience of a wedding. Like, you can tell that, like, it can very much so get the best of people. And I think that's one of the best things we ever did. We did a 2-year engagement, like one of the best ideas we ever had. Like, we've literally been so not stressed planning this wedding. It has been amazing. We've just been chipping away at it for 2 years and we literally have it all planned out. Aside from like all the little shit like that has to get planned leading up to it, but best decision we ever made. Also, you know, keeping it to people close to us, like not just inviting people we haven't talked to in like 2-3 years, but like keeping it very condensed to the people that are like, you know, our people. Like literally like 80 to 90 people are going to be at our wedding. So keeping it small, doing it really just in our own way, you know, doing a venue that we really enjoyed, not like, oh, are we going to impress people by this, you know, venue or whatever? Like, all that stuff is just like so irrelevant. And again, I feel like we just become so conditioned to think in that way and to think these things are important, when in reality, the one thing that's important is like that you enjoy it as a couple, that we enjoy the process together, that we enjoy, you know, what that day is going to look like. Cause we do consider everyone else. Like, I don't want to think about like we're not considering anyone else at all. Like, we definitely want people to like feel embraced and have a good time. We talked about even like, you know, doing a speech for everybody, like telling them how grateful we are that they're, you know, are at the wedding and the place that they hold just in our lives and how that is so important to us. But like, at the end of the day, it really is about us. It's our day, you know, it's our wedding. And so we're going to do it in the way that, you know, we feel fulfilled with and what we enjoy. And I feel like that has really helped us like literally not stress during this whole season.
Yeah, it's helped us really navigate everything. And I do think the length of time we've been engaged, it helped divide up all of the like vendors and the payments, which is a huge stressor for a lot of people. So that's helped us like financially, obviously, but also we've been making a lot of smart decisions at the end of the day. Like, our venue was meaningful to us because we can see the exact spot that we met the first day with the dogs. Like, it's meaningful to us for that reason. And that's something where we're like, okay, that's a splurge, but everywhere else we're going to save and do things at a very, not basic level, but like, in a way of like, at the end of the day, no one's going to remember these small details. So obviously right now we're not in a stressed place. We're 4 months out. I know that coaching a lot of brides myself the last month, like, ask me again then, because I know it's like the little things, the appointments, the seating charts, the RSVPs, like all that stuff does add up. At the end of the day, it's about us. And that's something that we've always kept at like the foundation of our wedding planning. And we're also extremely decisive. I think that's something that helps our stress levels is we didn't give ourselves like 6 different options and go see all them. Like, we picked one venue, we looked at it, we booked it. We didn't over and like analyze all these different places in Columbus or all these different options. And with dresses, like, I tried on 5, I picked the second one I tried on. I didn't make any other dress appointments because I'm like, I'll just confuse myself and overwhelm myself. And that's where the stress really happens. And you end up like going out of budget on stuff when you're like, oh, like, I really like that first option, but I think I can find something better. Like, it's just something that's, I think that's really got us through is like, we like, even for like transportation, that's like the last thing we have to do. We looked at 2 places. We reached out to both of them. We're going to pick the one that we trust in our gut is the right one. And that's how we've done it with everything. Like, our photographer, our first meeting, we're like, you're hired. We absolutely love her. And the same has been happening with all the vendors. And we feel so aligned with everyone we're working with because we've went with the choice that like we know in our hearts feels good. And we didn't overwhelm ourselves with a million different choices. So one thing I think is really helpful, and I remember even on our first call with Whitney, who's our photographer, she was like, hi Zach, I'm Whitney, like, I don't know if you know who I am, but Christina probably set up this appointment. I'm like, no, actually, like, Zach found, like, we both like agreed and like looked at your Instagram, we looked at everything, and he's been part of the planning process the whole way. And I know it's not always the case, but
yeah, guys, get involved, it's fun. Like, yeah, you don't have to make the girl do everything.
It's our party.
It's our event.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have said that to Zach too, like, oh, it's her big day, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's like our big day. And it's not fun if I'm planning it all myself. So like every appointment, even like a questionnaire we filled out for our DJ, Zach's like, I'll stop what I'm doing and help fill it out with you. Like, help fill that form out with you. Like, we want to do everything together. And I also think it's fun to like romanticize the planning process. Like, go on a date night and plan stuff. Like, make that part of your like quality time together. Don't think of it. And I mean, it is a stressful, you know, thing to plan for a lot of people. But I think if you remember all these date nights of like, oh, we planned our wedding, like while we were working on our relationship and we did it all together and we were both very decisive in it, it becomes so much less stressful. And I also just think, don't keep up with the Joneses. Like, do truly whatever makes sense to you. And we've gone to like weddings since we've booked a lot of things. I've seen people all over social media with weddings, TikTok, all this stuff. And I just have to like you just can't compare. You have to stay in your own lane and think like, this is what's meaningful to us. I don't have to buy a new dress because I loved this girl's dress. So, you know, it's just like, you're always going to be comparing, but like, that's what's going to ruin the fun of your wedding. Like, it's your wedding. People go to a million, like a bunch of weddings in their lifetime and a bunch of weddings in even 1 year. So I keep thinking like for our wedding that this is our one. And for the guests, this is one of the many that they'll go to. So the details, the comparison, like that shit does not matter. What matters is like, it's meaningful to Zach and I. And that's it. There's a lot of stuff we're doing untraditionally, and I'm excited to share that with you guys, like as the wedding, you know, pictures unfolds. And content unfolds. But that's all we've got for you guys today. I'm actually going to a bridal shower as we speak. So we hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving with your family. We have some family coming in town, so we'll be hosting this week. We are so grateful for just talking about our businesses and our relationship. Like, we're so grateful for everything, and we highly recommend you guys express your gratitude as much as possible this week. We are grateful for every single one of you. Especially if you listen to this outro, that means you really listen to the entire episode, and we appreciate that more than you know. We appreciate every single listen, every single share, every single subscriber. It means the absolute world to us. And we just love when you guys share on your stories and tag Zach, tag me, tag Life Rewired. And we also in the show notes have a bunch more free content for you guys with our newsletters, our Instagrams, Life Rewired Instagram. Like I said, I'll link the CBD down in the show notes as well. But at the end of the day, we're grateful for you. We're grateful for you being here, and we hope you guys have an awesome Thanksgiving.
Peace out, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.